Frank Sinatra!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, the football season has come to an end, Brock, but at least it was a fairly happy ending. About as good an ending as you could hope for as a Seahawks fan once the Seahawks had lost, right? You were kind of hoping the Chiefs would win. Like, you were rooting for the Chiefs,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. The whole Huard house was.
I think the whole Seattle was.
Yes.
I mean, where I was at, everybody's rooting for the Chiefs.
Poor Titus.
Oh, what happened?
Well, I mean, just the Huskies falling apart. His teams went 0-4 on Saturday, and then all of a sudden they're down 20-10, and he just...
0-4? How many teams does he have?
Well, just they... If one
he just keeps acquiring
teams.
Yeah,
no. No, one crazy hoops weekend of makeup games, and half the team was out, and yeah,
oh, the teams he plays on.
Yes, and he was starting to just kind of fall apart, and it was 20-10, and he's falling apart. Like, every team I root for.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I was like, bro, there's still time. There's still time. They can pull this out. So, no, don't laugh over there. Like, I wonder where he gets that from. I don't know where he gets that from.
Impossible to imagine.
It really is.
Yeah,
but no, everybody in our party, we had some folks over too. I think everybody was collectively rooting for those Chiefs.
Well, I was maybe 25, 30 people where I was at, and I would say if there were 30, 28 of them were rooting for the Chiefs. There was like one Niner fan, like it came like... And I kind of look around like, oh, I hope nobody noticed me. Everybody was rooting for the Chiefs. And it was a good game. I never felt like the Chiefs were fully out of it either. I mean, you know, they were only down 10.
Mm-hmm.
They had the most explosive offense. I know Mahomes didn't play well for a lot of the game and looked tight and this and that. But I don't know. I never felt like they let it get away from them. And based on some of the comebacks we've seen, not just by them, but in Super Bowls in the last few years, you better have a commanding lead if you think you're just going to run away with a football game like that.
So how would you grade it overall of Super Bowls? Was that a plus Super Bowl? Was that kind of
an
average?
Wasn't an incredible Super Bowl. Like, yeah. It's not going to go down as one of the all-times. It's a BB+.
BB+.
I mean, remember, the scale includes some of the all-time greats. Right. And it also includes, you know, all of the 90s where every game was bad. The late 80s and all through the mid 90s, every game was like a 40-point blowout that Dallas or San Francisco won going away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, take the Washington one going away. I mean, like, yeah, I'd say it's a B+, somewhere in that range. It was a good game.
It was a good game. And I thought it was well done. I thought the commercials overall from beginning to end were solid. I thought it was, yeah, I enjoyed it. I certainly got done and was, I think, like many, like, oh, man. What you just said to begin this podcast, football season's over.
I know.
Is it real? Well, it's not over.
It's
the
not
XFL,
over. Bro.
The XFL is coming this
weekend. We'll be talking some XFL.
Oh, you better
today.
Believe it.
Or at least
it.
Your big role in it.
Oh, you sure? The Roughnecks and the Wildcats?
Whoa.
I got to address your role. You know what? I don't even know that I have time to wait.
What?
Big announcement. Show announcement.
Yes.
You're doing sidelines for the NFL, for the XFL?
Darn
Brock
right.
Huard.
What do you mean sidelines?
Is the XFL's John Clayton.
What are you doing sidelines for?
What do you
for?
Mean, what am I doing sidelines for? I'm multiverse, whatever they need, baby. What do you want? You want
Why
an
aren't
analyst?
You doing color?
I'll do an analyst. You want me to be a reporter? I'll be the reporter.
He's a sideline analyst, not a sideline reporter.
You've seen McShay and Luganville do games.
I said he needed to get a Booger Mobile. I want the Brock Mobile.
That's how you
XFL.
Get famous, by doing the sideline stuff like McShay.
That's right.
I mean, that guy's enormous. He can't even get enough orange on his skin. He's so famous out there.
That's right.
How did you get stuck doing sidelines?
Well, that was my first question.
What kind of a contract do you have?
How many people said no before they got to me to say yes?
Get Gideon on the phone. What is in your contract that they can just make you do sidelines?
Yeah, well, I think as it turned out,
What city do you have to do this in? Is it going to be cold?
No, the nice thing is I go Houston. I'm only doing 3 games.
Oh, Houston is nice.
Houston.
That's a really nice thing.
Lucky you. You get to go to Houston.
Oh, it'd be great.
Now, to be fair, I've never been to Houston.
Yes.
I've never heard anyone call it anything other than a dump.
It is trash.
But good luck. All right, so you get to go to Houston.
Yes. And then I get Seattle.
Okay.
Seattle.
Outside in February.
Yes.
That sounds awful.
Go.
Hey.
I get the Dragons back
to dress
back
you?
Weeks.
Do they give you clothes for that?
No.
What?
No.
Brock's going player. He's going sleeveless.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to let any of the cold get to him.
Nope.
He's getting just all the elements right
that
on.
Seems like a terrible idea. So we should get Jessamyn in here to help guide you through this.
I'll scarf up. Pack. I'll hat up if it's rainy and nasty. I'll do what I've got
you'll
to do.
You'll hat up.
Yeah, I'll hat up.
But you consider asking for payment up front?
People
because
should remember,
kind of
Brock did AAF games
year,
and was never paid.
True.
So
that's true.
What do you
like? I don't know.
Here's what I need to know. 4 o'clock Saturday, are you going to be watching?
No.
On Fox.
I would have been, but now
I'm not. Absolutely.
Howdy?
Yes, definitely.
Hold all on. Of
you're
going to
be doing
in the
sidelines?
Podcast world? Yes, but I'm a sideline analyst.
I will definitely be watching for you to be the sideline reporter.
It's my buddy Joel Klatt.
Are you going to do the runoff interview with whatever cockamamie coach they have?
Thanks, Joel. It looks like he has entered the injury tent. People on the sidelines are saying it could be a lower leg injury. Yes. No timetable for return. Yep. Back to you, Joel.
There you go.
How did you get stuck doing this?
Well, I think a lot of people
just for the record,
no.
I have never one time seen an ex-player as the sideline reporter.
McShay and
McShay played
Luganville.
What professionally?
Luganville.
They played
professionally.
Richmond.
What
and
professional?
Georgia Tech.
Stop it. What professional players? Now Tony Siragusa
Feely,
was on. So, Tony
Siragusa.
Siragusa,
Booger McFarland. There've been lots of them.
Man.
Jeez.
It's rare air.
Take it down a notch over there.
Okay? Mount Rushmore of sideline reporters.
To be fair, those guys did it in the NFL. Not the XFL.
Yes. Well, you got to start somewhere.
All right, let's do some Super Bowl takeaways.
Takeaways.
And tidbits. I'm not really sure which is which. It's a combination of both. Brock divided them up. I just have a bunch of takeaways. What do you got?
I'm going to start with the quarterback, number one. I'm going to start with the quarterback that's the greatest on planet Earth. It's better than Russell Wilson. That's the number one quarterback going. And it was surprising to see Mahomes struggle for three quarters. That was the worst I've ever seen him play.
He's tight.
And I saw him in college.
He looked nervous.
He did. I don't know if the ball, both quarterbacks threw a bunch of ducks. And you've heard it said before that you get to a Super Bowl. And because they want all the commemorative footballs, they play with, so many footballs. And some of them are super waxy and it was warm down there, whatever. Both of them, the ball got away from them a lot. But that was the most erratic. That was, throwing and in the pocket that I had seen Mahomes. That was the most inconsistent. That was the most inaccurate. And he was everywhere for three quarters. He just was not, Patrick Mahomes. And he had his ability to flush that on that stage. That's pretty impressive. I mean, for a 24-year-old, the youngest Super Bowl MVP ever, to be able for three quarters to play at that level, two picks, two fumbles, right? To be just off. You're just off, man. How many pitchers do you see? Right? And we'll say this all the time. He just didn't have the command. Yeah, man wasn't there that day. I felt it in bullpen. I didn't have it. And you don't have it. And you don't have it that day. And all of a sudden,
I've never heard of anyone saying that about a football quarterback, though. Like, I don't have my command. Like, sorry. You don't get
You've
that.
You've seen a lot of quarterbacks go in a shell.
Yeah, but I'm not.
Throwing one pick and one fumble and another pick and another fumble.
Yeah, but
and my
most
eyes
of them
nowhere.
Are just named Manning. Like, I don't see too many other quarterbacks at the elite level go into a shell like that other than the Mannings. And I'm not making a joke. I'm being serious. For the most part, other elite quarterbacks, they're able to overcome those things. And so,
I mean, Brady in his Super Bowl when they were 18-0, he never got into rhythm. He was off. He was getting hit. He was getting harassed, and he never.
Yeah, but I never thought of that as a Brady thing. I thought of that as that they beat him up. Then I mean, they continued to find ways to get in his life. I saw that as what the Giants did to Brady, rather than Brady not having a great game. Mahomes, I think you're right, didn't play well early. I mean, he threw a pick, threw another pick. The first pick was bad. The second pick was sort of 50-50 whether or not it was his fault. Mm-hmm. Every ball he threw, it looked like he was short-arming and just tentative and not sure what to do. So do you think it was that he overcame it, or do you think they eventually figured out the San Francisco defense and he gained some confidence because he knew where to throw the ball?
I thought it was more the latter. I think he felt that rush like any quarterback does, like Brady did against the Giants. Like, oh my gosh, we can't block these guys. And that four-man rush was hitting him. He was having to move. He was having to flush. The game's biggest play came when he finally said, okay, I'm not going to sit in this pocket.
Right.
And I'm not going to scramble right and left. I'm going to drop back 11 steps and throw it from 15 yards deep out of the shotgun. I have never seen that. Super Tecmo Bowl, the last time I saw that move. But in order to get rid of this ball, I'm going to retreat, honestly, 11 yards.
Willie Galt's just running down the
yes.
left sideline?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They just go back, and the music's playing, and all of a sudden you launch it 80 yards. And for him, he felt that front. That front was affecting him, affecting that line. And really, until 7:05 left on that 3rd and 15, did they finally puncture them? Did they finally go, oh, there's our big play. Oh, there's what we are capable of doing against these guys. And to be able to seriously play 53 minutes on that stage with all the expectations on the world, not playing well, not having command, and to just flush that was Russell Wilson, Green Bay Packers, NFC title-esque.
Yeah.
That's what it was
similar.
That's what it reminded me of.
Just as an aside to that, you just brought up the 3rd and 15. Was third and 10 plus like the worst disaster in the playoffs this year?
Yes.
Like getting teams into this awful third and 10, 12, 14, and team after team found a way to get out of that hole offensively is really bizarre.
Correct. Yeah, the third and 10 to Kelce, the pass interference in the end zone.
Yeah.
Right? That ultimately led to the touchdown as well. Yeah, if you're a 49er fan, that third down. If you're a Seahawks fan, your third down defense the last couple years in the playoffs, right? You're just scratching your head and figuring out a way to get that done. And if you're a San Francisco 49er fan, those third downs in the fourth quarter are going to haunt you for a long, long time.
Takeaways.
Well, if you want to start with the Kansas City quarterback, I'll start with the San Francisco version. Jimmy G's got kind of a noodle arm. And you kind of got to see it more. I watched him a lot over the last few weeks. I like Garoppolo, not as much as my wife does. There were a lot of questions about Jimmy Garoppolo as well, kind of going through it.
Who's cuter, Kyle? Wow. Howdy. Mahomes or Garoppolo?
Oh,
what?
What?
How
don't
is that? What?
That
Stop.
Well, let's see. I had one, Stop. Two. I had six girls in the house.
Garoppolo's in a league of his own. That's not a shot at Mahomes. Garoppolo's
Mahomes
in his own category.
Next question.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's
what I'm saying.
Yeah, look at the Hubert's. Molly chose you. Let's be clear. Jimmy G's got kind of a noodle arm, and he'll make at least two bad decisions a game. He's pretty accurate. He mostly manages the game well, right? But he doesn't have elite arm strength, and he gives the other team at least a couple of shots every game. And unfortunately for him, fortunately I think for the rest of us, that's enough to lose a Super Bowl. Right? I mean, like, if you're going to not be able to throw the ball deep with any sort of accuracy, mm-hmm. and, you know, if he throws accurately on that deep ball in the final drive, we're maybe having a different conversation today. It might end up being an all-time Super Bowl because you get to then see what Mahomes does coming back the other way, down three, and then maybe they go to overtime and all that, but he doesn't have the accuracy on a deep ball like that because he doesn't really have the arm strength. He's got to, you know, take a little crow step like Max Hall in order to get the ball 40, 50 yards down there. He's a good quarterback, and I don't think the Niners are going to be in bad shape moving forward. They don't need to get rid of him, but he's not going to be an elite quarterback, I don't believe, with that level of arm strength. And you know that's not like my number one priority. He is accurate, which is what's going to keep him in the positive category, but without the arm strength and without, you know, elite decision making, I don't see how Jimmy Garoppolo becomes an elite quarterback.
And he is, we've had this conversation a bunch on this podcast. He's not a dual threat guy. He's not a guy
he'll
that can
run around.
Create.
He'll move a
much.
Little bit in the pocket,
not
but that's
much.
About it.
He's not going to extend plays. He's not a runner. He's not going to go get you 8 or 9 yards on third downs.
He's
with
no
his
Nick
legs.
Mullins.
No. And he was you also, are. He was also this year, one of the top 10 cap numbers in all the NFL. I think his cap number this year was close to $30 million, $26-27 million. So if you're, and this has kind of dominated the conversation at our station here this week, and you talk about, well, it's about the best case scenario for the Seahawks, if you come at it with Seahawk lenses, was that best case that he was exposed? And was he indeed exposed? That
I think
he's
was
not
at least a
franchise.
Little. It's a not like the Chiefs have an elite defense. I mean, I thought they played well and got after him a little bit, but they don't have an elite defense. They have a good defense, and I thought they made Jimmy G look mortal at best. So, yeah, I think that's a good sign if you're a Seahawks fan moving forward. In the last couple of seasons, you've seen Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo both have bad Super Bowls. That doesn't mean they can't bounce back, but I don't know that I'm going to bet on either one of them ever becoming an elite quarterback. And so despite your division having three other good teams, I think that's probably a good sign if you're a Seahawks fan.
Takeaways.
All right, can I give you a little tidbit? Thank you.
That's just a tidbit.
I thought the NFL 100 on the field, the 100 great players on the field before the game, followed by the commercial of the kid taking the ball and running across the country and through all the different franchises and then ultimately onto the field with a dozen other kids come running and pouring onto the field as if it was live, like the commercial continued with them finishing it there. That set the table as well as anything I've ever seen in sports. To see the 100 greatest players on the field, and for me, right, to see the quarterbacks at the end. Like, it just, I was sitting there, I was like, man, that's right. I watched Montana, right, on this Super Bowl Sunday for how many different years? I watched Elway. There is Marino. There is Peyton. There is Brady. There is Roger Staubach in the wheelchair. Like, there's those guys all right there. It just brought back so many flashbacks. And then to have the wherewithal or the means or the creativity to take the first commercial being young kids It just, man, it hit me on both sides. Why are you all smiling
Mike
at me?
Mike is just sitting
just
there.
Looking
with
at
the
Mike.
Most cynical,
why,
grinch-like
why are you
grin.
All smiling
like
at
he's
me?
Just baiting you into his trap.
No.
Just like, go on, Brock.
I'm not
go on,
at
go
all.
On.
You could
Step
not
right
be more
in.
Wrong. I didn't see any of that. I have no idea what Brock's talking about. I was driving to the party I went to. I didn't see 1 second of what he's talking about.
To be fair, Brock, that was spectacular.
Was it cool?
It was really cool. It was just that reminder of, like, what is the essence of what we're doing here? We're talking about family and football and just the best of all of those things on the field. That's what we're going to celebrate. Not opulence, not performance. It's just...
All right, that's for the halftime show. Let's be clear.
Yes.
You don't do that before the game. You do that in the middle of the
You
game.
Know what Tusky it is like.
I think I would have liked that. I honestly didn't see it. I just, I was driving and... Or
but you know what it's like when you see a bunch of old baseball players
That's
together,
awesome. I love, what, I love that players. Stuff.
Imagine the 100 best
That's
who
great.
Have ever played.
And who stood out?
They were all on the field. I mean, Jim Brown is down. They're all on the field.
Who else stood out? Who like when you're looking and you're like, oh, nice, so-and-so is there.
I love the linemen, right? To see Walter and Bruce Matthews, honestly, and Ogden and those linemen sitting there. Like it was also almost stereotypical in some way. Mm. Like there's alignment all together. Like, yeah, man, we know we never get the credit everybody else does, but that fraternity of being alignment and the love, the brotherhood that they have. To
How
see
about the Walrus fraternity? Big Walrus fraternity feeling out there. The D linemen, like they still have that cohesion.
They're all lying on the ground in the corner.
Grass on each other. And they go to the linemen. They're like laying on cots in the end zone.
Now you see the different guys that are beat up. Obviously, the older guys. Don Shula was there, just as
That's
the
cool.
proudest of proud grandpas, right? And he's there, and he too is in a wheelchair, and he is waving, and he's got a smile, and he's so proud of Miami. And it was Miami; it's his roots. It's the undefeated team. I mean, it did. And I think Joe Buck even said it right when they came back after that. It was like, or Aikman, like, man, I am welling up right now. Like that is a football fan. That just hits you. And then to spin it fast forward and to have these kids just playing this kid's game and to have them run onto the field, right, to honestly go from that end of the spectrum of all these old guys that have done it to the new blood, to what's coming, and then ultimately the feast of the Super Bowl, it was about as well done as anything I've seen.
Takeaways.
I'll go back to the Niners for my second one. I think Deebo Samuel might be my favorite non-Seahawk in the NFL.
Is this tidbit or takeaway?
I don't know. He's on the short
list. It's a takeaway.
I guess it's a
Mike
takeaway.
Mike has been pounding this point on me.
I love
wide receiver, and you hate wide receiver.
I know, but he's not. That's why I like him. He's up there with Derrick Henry and Drew Brees and a couple of other non-Seahawks that I love in the NFL. That guy's a blast to watch. If he were on my team, he would be my favorite player on the team, or at least he'd sure be in the running. He is a wide receiver, but he doesn't play that way. He's physical. He's mean. He runs people over. He blocks well. He's hard to tackle. He's really hard to tackle. He never just goes down from the first hit.
Did you love Anquan Boldin back in the day?
I don't
remember you loving him quite as much.
Well, Anquan Boldin had so much size and was slow. Like, Deebo Samuel, I don't think he's quite as big as Anquan Boldin.
You're talking about Steve Smith now.
Yeah, I did like Steve Smith, but Steve Smith was a little guy and like a talker. I did like Steve Smith. But I don't know. There's something about Deebo Samuel. Just every time I watch him, he jumps off the screen to me. He's a football player playing wide receiver, which is kind of a rare thing. And I'm not exactly excited to play against him the next few years as a Seahawks fan. But I guess I'll bring it back to the Seahawks and ask the question. Would you want him over DK Metcalf? If you had your choice right now, moving forward, you've seen them both for
DK.
1 year.
Give me DK.
You want DK?
Give me 6'3", 230, running 4'3", playing on the perimeter, winning outside. Right, Debo's a little bit more kind of jet sweepy, and I think learning the wide receiver position even more than DK had to learn it. Yeah, I think in that case.
So their numbers this year were not exactly the same, but they weren't that far off from each other. They had one catch apart, like 57 and 58, and DK had about 100 more yards than Samuel did total. But their numbers were not altogether all that different from each other. You could argue about who had the better quarterback and who had the better offense and who was more set up for some of that stuff. Yeah, Samuel also had some of the jet sweep yards and that stuff. I don't know. I think DK's got the higher upside just because of his freak show body and size and strength and all that. But I don't know that I would bet against Deebo Samuel being the better player when it's all said and done.
My favorite Husky the last 10 years, I think you guys know this, Dante Pettis. I love that guy as a Husky.
He's doing
I love
a great
him as
job
a person.
The pros.
I do wonder, like in Moneyball, that scene in Moneyball, right, where Billy Bean is sitting in the dugout in AA, or maybe single high, wherever it was, and he looked over at Lenny Dykstra, and he's like, that dude just has it, and I don't. Like, I've got these five tools, and I'm really pretty, and I can do all these things, and I'm supposed to be the one, and I can see that that guy has it. Dante Pettis was also a second-round pick. Deebo Samuel was a second-round pick in back-to-back years. And I wonder if Dante Pettis just looks at that guy and goes, ooh, man, that's not me. Right? And takes a real good look in the mirror and goes, if I'm going to play in this league, now I don't have to be that guy. And
right,
I'm never
he's
gonna
not
be
that
as
style.
Physical. But I've got to have the same courage, and I got to have the same want to, and I got to be able to catch the ball and be able to play in contact. Yeah. I think a DK, I think a Deebo, I think an AJ Brown there in Tennessee.
That
those,
kid's good too.
Well, they're all physical dudes. In today's NFL, you got an opportunity with more finesse defenses to not just be a physical running back. If you can be a physical receiver, you can make your mark. All right, little takeaway for you. Takeaway, Kyle. Takeaway.
Takeaways.
Andy Reid. Andy Reid, if it's Patrick Mahomes is the number one story in this Super Bowl, 1A is Andy Reid. And their relationship is something I envy a little bit, to be honest. And just looking at that and watching, I don't know if it's father-son, if it's mentor-student, however you'd want to frame it there, but those two, you know, they are
takeaways.
To hip. And to just watch them interact and to watch Andy Reid evolve. Partly because of Mahomes, but also because he knows he's got to adapt and change. Andy Reid came out of Mike Holmgren's tree, right? And he was staunch West Coast for a decade.
He came out of Bill Walsh's tree, right?
Yes, but I think it was really Holmgren that he, you know, bloomed in Green Bay, where he went from O-line coach, QB coach, coordinator. It was in Green Bay where I think he really kind of cut his teeth and grew into that role that ultimately led him to the head coaching job. And while in Philly, he was a West Coast guy. You watched him for 10 years and you kind of knew the plays and your West Coast system and McNabb and all of that. And he goes to Kansas City and I think he further evolves and adapts. And you just read behind the scenes of what he's been kind of willing to do and grow his system and to adapt his scheme to not just be this West Coast guy that I watched for a decade. And I can't help but think a little bit to Pete here in Seattle to turn that a little bit to, okay, here's a guy that had been doing it for decade after decade after decade, right? Gets a young phenom
one
talent.
One way.
Yes, one way largely. And gets a phenom talent Mahomes and also looks, I think, at his career. Humbled a little bit in Philadelphia. Didn't work in Philadelphia. Got there but could never finish the deal. Could not win the Super Bowl. Was, 1-4 in title games. And I think goes to Kansas City and says, all right, I've got to adapt a little bit. Not too dissimilar to Pete Carroll, who gets fired out of New England in the Jets and goes to SC and really learns at SC and comes into this league and is adapted and grown. But I just do wonder at this stage, is there some of that new, fresh blood that can come in and just kind of refurbish things a little bit defensively?
I know what you're saying. It's because Pete's done this before. It's not like he's the same guy that came out of Bill Walsh's system himself.
Correct.
He's evolved and he's adapted and he's done it a few different times, both here in Seattle and before he got here. But I know what you're saying, that maybe it's time for another one, that every few years, five, 7 years, whatever it is, the league starts to catch up, and maybe that's when you've got to make some of those changes. I also had Andy Reid on mine here as well. He just seems like a good guy. He seems really easy to root for. He always has. I know he's had some challenges in his home life, his family life, but God, seeing him there with his wife afterwards and just how close they were, it was a nice part of the story. It was easy to root for him.
Mm-hmm.
Also good for him for being aggressive, right? I mean, going for fourth down early in the game and getting it right. I thought he was pedal to the metal, pretty aggressive the whole game. He didn't have to make any difficult clock decisions, thankfully for him. That's not exactly been his strength. Here's my question. If Richard Sherman had made the play of the game and knocked him out of bounds at the 1-inch line after review, would have been a heck of a play by Sherm. Do you go for it? You're down 3. There's about 2 minutes left, just over 2 minutes left to play. Do you go for it? Or do you kick the field goal and tie it up?
All 3 timeouts, too.
Yep, you have all 3 timeouts, so you can stop them again. But you're putting the onus on your defense to stop them. Now, granted, they'll be at the 1-inch line if you don't get it. Do you trust your defense to get them back off the field and Patrick Mahomes to come back and kick a field goal just to tie, or do you just kick the field goal, tie it, and then still have a lot of those same things?
I think you have to go for it in that moment. You've done it all game long. I think you have to go for it with that thought of if we don't get it, it is at the 1-inch line, and we've got all three timeouts left and the 2-minute warning, and we'll only need a field goal, right, to tie it then at that point to get the ball back. I think you've got to go for it.
Yeah, I think you do too, but I've been talked into that because my initial feeling in the moment was you got to kick it.
Mm-hmm.
You just tie up the game. You're down three. You'll never live with yourself if you don't. You have to just tie the game up. But I think hearing you say that, I think you're right. I think I'm talked into the idea of going for it there because there's a couple of advantages. If you do get the touchdown, which obviously they did, mm-hmm. you're up four instead of up three, which puts mm-hmm. all the pressure on the Niners to get a touchdown and not a field. Whatever reason is a major, major difference in the NFL in 2-minute drill. So that advantage is enormous. Also, if you don't get it, they're at the 1-inch line. They're going to try to run it out. You've got your three timeouts, and you still got Mahomes and a pretty good kicker in Butker. So I think you're right. I think the right thing to do is to go for it. If I had been in that situation myself in that moment, I'm not sure I would have realized it, though. I think I probably would have kicked it.
Takeaways.
All right, well, while we're talking coaches and while we're talking about some decision-making, Kyle Shanahan's obviously a great play designer, but he's now got two pretty big black marks on his resume, don't you think? I mean, he's got a couple of games now. One as an offensive coordinator and now as a head coach. And those have a way of just sticking with you long term. So he'll get grief for the last few drives with the lead. And I know that 2nd and 5 play is one that's getting a lot of, it's been analyzed and debated over the last couple of days. Well, what the heck was he doing at the end of the first half? What was that? And that's twice because he did the exact same thing here in the final game of the regular season against the Seahawks. One of the reasons the Seahawks were even able to come back in that game. He had all kinds of time and a timeout. All he needed to do was trust Jimmy G to go down the field and get a field goal kicked in the 2-minute drill either time. And it completely changes the entire tenor of both of those games. But is he scared? Does he just not trust Garoppolo? I thought he was badly outcoached. And now that makes a couple of years in a row where the young Turk, last year it was McVay, this year it's Shanahan, were badly, badly schooled by an old veteran on the other sideline.
Okay, a couple things here. This bleeds into one of my takeaways as well. But just the big picture is perception and how hard it is to change. Perception is now, oh, we can't finish. And this is not once, this is twice. And these are two of the biggest failures in the fourth quarter in the history
Major.
Of the Super Bowl. 99.9% chance you were going to win it as far as the odds go when you were the Falcons up 28-3. You win that, right? And you never seen a comeback like that in the Super Bowl. That was Tom Brady on the other side. This time it's Mahomes, but you had a 96% chance sitting at 3rd and 15 with 7 minutes to go, a 96% chance you're going to win it. And when you lose both of those, it is hard. It's like a bad broadcaster. Right, once that label is done, you're a bad broadcaster, and I can't listen to you. And that perception is very hard to break.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a perception standpoint. On the other side, and this was one of my takeaways, and it plays into this, and I think it plays right back here in Seattle. And Pete Carroll, and some of the times he's got to make decisions. And I'll be curious if you buy my baseball analogy here. Because here I go again, taking a football story and always making a baseball. It's what I do. When you're a baseball team, and you've got the most dominant closer going, and a tremendous bullpen, you play that game a little bit differently on the back end. You know, if I can get just this game to the 5th inning or 6th inning, you are managing all of those situations because you've got that elite closer and that elite bullpen to finish it.
And he thought that highly of his defense?
When you've got an elite defense, right, that is taking the ball away, and we have seen this with Pete Carroll. When you've got an elite defense, and Pete Carroll will tell you this, and you will hear coaches say this all the time, when you've got that elite defense, the other team will often give the ball away. They will often find ways to lose the game. Rather than you just being the aggressor when
you
don't have
that. And that's totally fine when you're playing Andy Dalton, but you're playing Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. That's a different thing. I understand what you're saying, and in the right game, I totally agree with it. You're going against the best young quarterback in football. What are you talking about?
For 10 years, about a good 6 years.
And that offense?
This with Pete Carroll. We've watched Pete play these games like that. How
yeah, but
many
A,
times?
This Niners defense is not as good as the Seahawks defense was in 2013 and 14. And B, Patrick Mahomes is different. And that offense is different. And with those wide receivers, I'm sorry, I understand what you're saying. Believe me, I just don't agree that it's the right way to handle that. And I think that you saw it. It didn't work. He got tight. And that's a couple times now that has happened to him. So, yeah, certainly that wasn't what happened with the Atlanta team a couple of years ago. They weren't just so gaga about they're supposed to be an offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. I'm not buying it. I just think being a young coach has a lot of advantages. It is easy to relate to players. It is easy to create great energy. But sometimes the old dogs still have some tricks up their sleeve. And I think that's what you saw from Belichick last year over McVay, who looked kind of cowed by the moment. And I thought that's what happened to Shanahan. It got too big for him right
You
there.
Think the end of that...
I thought the game sped up on him.
You think the end of that first half, the statement that head coach and play caller makes to his quarterback impacted Garoppolo in the second half?
100%. 100% yes. I thought that was a huge mistake, and at the time I couldn't believe he did that.
Yeah, John Lynch thought so too. I thought that was one of the more compelling pictures and shots that Fox had.
Yep.
And by the way, when you've got all those cameras that they do for those games, right? And here's a little tidbit behind the scenes. Before games, especially big games, I'll pull out a $100 bill. And it's amazing what just a little bit of incentive will do for camera people. Oh, yeah. And I'll say to the director, okay, $100 for the best shot of the game. And you should see the camera people get all excited. So they then are just scouring and searching. So for all those camera people, whoever had that shot of John Lynch in that game probably got a little C-note or more from Troy or somebody else behind the scenes.
Is that really your territory?
Yeah, also, why didn't we get things like that on the radio? I mean, I know we're not cool television, but never $100 for the best drop of the show or of the year.
I always won it. That's why you never actually saw it.
Nobody else.
Brock's been doing
knew.
This for years.
Takeaways. Tidbits.
I'll give you a little tidbit.
I wanted to make fun of somebody. Sorry, it's time for this.
All right.
Sherm. Oh, Sherm, where are you? Where's Richard Sherman? Where are you? Could you pull up my computer here for a minute, here, Sean?
I just hear you.
Offensive line. Where are you?
Where are you?
I don't hear you.
I don't hear you, Richard. I don't hear you.
Where are you?
Where are you? What happened to Richard, Brock? What happened to Richard? What happened?
Well, he got beat a couple times.
Did he?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's what it is. You know, we didn't execute at the end. They got the win. Guys weren't really tired. Just didn't execute at the end. There was. You know, we just didn't execute at the end. You got to execute the full four quarters. We're still a great defense. You got to execute at the end, though.
It could go on and on. There's another 15 seconds.
That was the whole post game.
You know, they gotta work hard. You know, this is what happens. You go out there, you execute. You don't execute, you lose the game. These guys knew what we needed to do to win that game, and we didn't execute. Yeah, we felt confident the whole game, you know, but you gotta execute.
You gotta give Sherm credit. He did own it at the end. He did not make excuses entirely. He did not blame everybody else. I mean, he didn't call
it a funny play.
He didn't say it was just kind of a funny play. I mean, I would say Sherm owned it as much as he needed to or possibly could have. But watching him get burned in one of, if not the biggest play of the game, down the right sideline, I'll give credit to Kevin Martinez, who I was watching the game with, Mariners PR executive extraordinaire, who right before that play said, "They got Sherm on an island. They got to go deep." And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't test Sherm. He's like, "They got to do it now." And sure enough, that play, Sammy Watkins deep down the sideline, Sherman left in his dust. What happened?
Well, I will say this. I'll give you a little football.
What happened?
Sherman, his tweet, was his post-game presser that we played the clips from. His tweet said, "I'm proud of this team. Wasn't the results we wanted, but we battled through. I wasn't good enough tonight, and I will fix that." You don't hear that much.
No, that's different for him.
I don't think you've ever heard that. Like, I wasn't good enough. That was on me, right? Tyreek got me once, and obviously Sammy got me at the big moment, and then obviously not enough juice to make that tackle 2 inches before the goal line in any of those situations wasn't good enough, and kind of owning that responsibility. That was a heck of a play, man. You inside release, Mike, you've got to be right. As a wide receiver in that moment, right, when you're out on an island, you know what I want as a quarterback? I want an outside release, and you stack him, and you beat him immediately, and you give me all that room to go throw. You take an inside release as a wide receiver, you better win clean, and you better get right back and stack it. The odds of that happening, and that are rare. And Richard, I'm sure in that moment thought there's no way he's inside releasing. There's no way he's going to squeeze it and make it that much harder and have to be perfect on that turn. And he was.
Did you see Sammy Watkins gave credit to the previous game that he watched?
Yep.
That I saw this on film.
That was Devontae Adams.
Credit to Devontae Adams who did this and showed me how to do it.
I'll just tell you, of the, I said maybe 30 people that I was watching the game with, 28 of them, again, happy to, like, laugh at Sherm when they showed his face afterwards. Like, after he got burned and they showed his, like, rolling his eyes face, everybody, like everybody,
isn't that
was taunting
Sherm. Isn't that the sports villain?
Yes.
Isn't that what comes with it?
It's what he wants.
All that talk. and you talk about your contract and your incentives and the best, and you tout your stats and all of it, well, then when you get your beat and your helmet's face down in the ground as that guy wins the game, you're going to hear it on the other end.
Yep.
And be willing to actually hear it and absorb it. And then ultimately for him, big step, to say, I wasn't good enough.
Very good for him.
Takeaways.
All right, little tidbit. Miami's a great scene for a Super Bowl.
Sure.
New Orleans is a great scene for a Super Bowl. And this is just a really random thought as I watched that game. And again, I had all sorts of flashbacks, starting with the greatest 100 players, watching the kids play. To me, the Rose Bowl is the greatest venue to watch a football game, especially as the sun sets over those mountains in Southern California. The Rose Bowl used to host Super Bowls. I would love to see, at some point in my lifetime, the Rose Bowl host one more Super Bowl. I don't know if it can happen. It doesn't have the suites. It doesn't have the corporate appeal. It doesn't have all the corporate fluff that they love to build around it and build into it and everything else. But my goodness, I would love to see that gem on a Sunday afternoon.
What you're saying, let's be clear, that will never happen because any future Super Bowl in L.A. will be in the new stadium in L.A. So now that they've built or just about to be done with this gigantic new stadium, and you're going to add Las Vegas into the mix as a Super Bowl site, I mean,
true.
I don't see it happening. But, you know, what you could end up with now, and the NFL will continue to let some of these random cities host Super Bowls, but at this point, don't you think they should go L.A., Las Vegas, New Orleans, Miami?
Yes.
And just keep it, Phoenix. Give it to those five cities.
Do it like the college football.
You don't, maybe Dallas, I guess, because they've got Jerry's World there and all that. But you don't need to go to Houston again. You don't need to go to Indianapolis. You don't need to go
Tampa
to Detroit. You don't need to go back to Tampa.
San Fran.
You don't need to do any of those
things. We've long lobbied for a Super Bowl in Seattle. Can we admit it?
Well, now that you have L.A. and I mean, now I think they need to. Like, if you were going to keep going to every city, fine. But get rid of that. Miami and New Orleans and Los Angeles and Las Vegas and maybe one, you know, maybe Phoenix, maybe Dallas. Mm-hmm. But there's just no reason to go anywhere else. I just make it special. Make it the Super Bowl. So I agree with what you're saying, Brock, but I don't see that happening.
I think we could do like 2 hours of these takeaways. So
all right, let me give you a couple tips.
Sift through, okay.
Takeaways.
I love the halftime show. I thought it was great. And, you know, every year, you know, we have the same conversation about the halftime show. Why didn't Metallica play? He's one of my favorite bands. Like, yeah, you don't actually want that. The last, like, if you love Metallica, go see Metallica. Don't watch them play three songs to the entire, like, you'd just be mad that everybody else was watching Metallica because that's not why you got into that band to begin with. They're special. They're different. Leave them in their own space. The Super Bowl halftime show should be for pop stars, and I don't care whether pop stars sing or lip sync. I'm totally fine with them lip syncing because the last thing I want to hear is J-Lo completely out of breath while she's trying to dance.
She was lip syncing?
I'm going to guess she may have been. Yeah. I thought it was fine. I thought it was great. And good for Shakira. Good for J-Lo. Totally fine halftime show. I could have used a few other people in there. I would have liked to have seen Gloria Estefan in the Miami Sound Machine. Not for a full show, but she could have gotten 30 to 60 seconds,
she's
don't
74
you think?
Now.
Come on, do that, Junga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Like, wouldn't you have wanted a little of that?
Yeah.
That got me pretty excited.
You would have liked that, right? Or the rhythm is going to get you or something like that.
Yeah.
I thought maybe they could have found a way to get either Jan Hammer's Miami Vice theme in there or somehow get Don Johnson and Crockett Tubbs, the whole deal. Like, where were those guys? It seems like a tribute to Miami like this could have included some of those guys, no?
I think for those of you that have hosted...
like a little of this? It could have opened with this. Shakira couldn't have danced to the Miami Vice theme? I think she could have.
I think for those of you that have hosted music podcasts, you probably have the authority to speak on the music end of things.
Right.
And I understand that. Like, it's just no longer about the music. It used to be about the music, right? When they had singers come out there.
A couple of years it's been about the music, but it's mostly just been about the spectacle.
I mean, it used to. Decades and decades ago, I think, was somewhat about the music.
Back when it was marching bands?
Yeah.
Not the original marching band, but there was
a stretch
run there. I don't think it was ever about
those. Some years it is. When you know, when Tom Petty is there or Prince is there.
When Bruce Springsteen
was there. Yeah, when they have real musicians here. Yeah, and in the other years when they have pop stars, it's about the performance.
It can no longer be about the music. There's no way it could possibly, in this day and age, be about the actual music and the songs and singing, the way that we consume music, in the way that you're not going to get it its best in that venue and at a halftime performance. It can't be about the music.
Did you like the spectacle?
Absolutely not. The stripper poles come out. I'm like, really?
It seemed a little unnecessary.
Come on, what are we... Yeah, I had to step away.
You had to step away?
Yeah,
did you ask?
Oh, really?
Others to leave the room?
No, I didn't. Nope.
I hosted a Super Bowl
Titus,
party.
Titus, come with me.
Nope.
Yep. I hosted a Super Bowl party at my church.
Oh, that must have been uncomfortable.
And right before the halftime show started, I stood up in front of the screen and said, "All right, everyone, whoever doesn't know, the halftime show will be Shakira and J-Lo. You can do whatever you want. But I just want you to know this is what's going to happen."
Yeah, they won't be wearing anything, and they're going to be dancing everywhere.
Well, they're wearing bodysuits.
And
I mean,
we'll see whether or not the stripper poles come out or not. Oh, they do. Okay, awesome. There we go. That's great. Yeah.
You think she's got that pole at home for, like, her and A-Rod? Like, do they have a private pole at home?
All right.
All right. We're not going there? We're not doing that? Just. You got to. I mean, right. To practice.
Yeah.
That's all I mean.
Takeaways.
Okay, I've got one last takeaway for you.
I love Shakira, man. Shakira's great. I thought she did a good job. I really enjoyed Shakira.
5'2".
She's 5'2"? All right. Well, I thought she did a good job. No matter what her height was, I thought she did a great job. She was fun.
Salk, you have long said, here's a little takeaway. You have long said safeties are the most underappreciated players on the football field. Look at all the great teams.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Well, look at two Hall of Famers, in fact. In this Hall of Fame class of five, guess what? You had two safeties, in Polamalu and Atwater.
Psyched for Atwater.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
So you have long clamored for the safeties never getting their due. You'll hear John Clayton say over and over again, but also two. Let's put it this way. You pay five positions. And you know what? It's never a safety.
No.
You pay the quarterback, and you pay the left tackle in the end, and now the corner and the receiver. Those are the five guys you pay. Everybody else, whatever. Well, I think that's turning just a little bit because I think safeties have gotten a little bit more of their due. They're getting paid a pretty penny, and I think the Ed Reeds and the Troy Polamalus and now the Atwaters and the Hall of Famers and everything else are getting their due. I think it's time to talk about the other position, and that being the tight ends. Mm-hmm. That in today's NFL, and I don't think it was coincidence, you had the two best tight ends in the NFL lined up on opposite sides of each other playing in that game. George Kittle and Travis Kelce are the two best tight ends now that Gronk's out. Why did the New England Patriots fall off the cliff? Well, but Tom didn't have anybody to throw to, and where's all their wide receivers? Well, you know who he didn't have for the first time in a decade? The most dominant physical tight end in the game, and Rob Gronkowski. And, you know, it makes me think about, obviously, here in this town, and Will Dissly. And what Will Dissly has shown in the 7, 8, 10 games that he has played professionally before blowing his knee up and blowing his Achilles up, the difference that dude makes on a football field in today's NFL. That tight end is a really valuable commodity.
Can we spend a minute or so on this podcast? We have a little more space because I think this is a really interesting.
Well, we spent an hour on tidbits and takeaways.
That's all right, but so I think it's an interesting spot. So I was thinking some of the same stuff. As I was watching the game, what do these two teams have in common? And one of the only things I could think of, besides they both wore red, was that they both had their best receivers a tight end. And that was maybe the only thing they really had in common between them were those two guys.
Yeah.
What is it that is making that position more and more important? My theory would be, and you can tell me how accurate this is, that it's that in a game that is so much about play action and so much about trying to confuse the defense as opposed to just maul them, mm-hmm. that the tight end has such an advantage. They are that blocking position where in play action they can absolutely look like they're blocking. Or even in formation, make it seem like it's going to be a run, but actually still be available as a passing threat. They just they put more pressure mentally on the defense than any other position.
Yeah, I think that is fair. I think that's absolutely an aspect of it. I think going back to Steve Atwater and Cam Chancellor, you're not seeing many safeties built like that anymore. Why? Because you have to be fast.
There's no point.
What about linebackers? Are you seeing Levon Kirkland playing linebacker in a 3-4 in today's NFL? No, you're not. Because those guys got to be fast. Those guys are getting smaller. Safeties are getting smaller. I've got to cover all of this. Oh, and then I've got to cover all this RPO and play action game that you talk about, right? In this run pass, and I can't be...
But shouldn't the smaller linebackers be better at covering those tight ends?
Not when the tight ends...
Because those smaller
are
linebackers
five
are the
old...
But they're the old safeties. Like the Mark Barrons are the guys that used to play safety and now kind of play that linebacker. Steve Atwater now might be playing linebacker in a nickel package.
Yes.
So wouldn't he be able to cover the tight end still from that position the way he used to as a safety?
It's 6'1", 230 versus 6'5", 250. Right? I mean, that is where a Kittle and that is where a Kelce are unique. That is where Gronk, even when he was beat up with elbow braces and knee braces and everything else and rib protectors because of that frame, that entry post-pass, sorry, what are you going to do? You can't guard this. I'm 6'6" and 250, 260, and you're not. And I can use my frame, and then I can use some of that quickness. And, yeah, those elite tight ends, I don't think, as I said, it was coincidence that they were the last two standing. on Super Bowl Sunday.
Takeaways.
Okay, can I give you one last tidbit? That's it. Roger from Tacoma. I want a fullback. I've had enough of this. Pete Carroll and Schottenheimer and Schneider, and I know
can't
you guys
find
are
one.
Listening.
I can't find
I know
one.
You're all listening. I know Pete's wife's listening. Glenda, I know you're listening, and I want a fullback like Roger Goodell. I mean, like Roger in Tacoma. Want an offensive guard. I want a fullback on the Seahawks roster. Juszczyk was awesome. He is a weapon. He's a Swiss Army knife. He could have been the Super Bowl MVP if he catches that second touchdown. And you know, you saw the difference when he was in that lineup this season and when he wasn't. He's an absolute factor. And for the Seattle Seahawks, can I please, this offseason and in this draft and into next season, if you're going to continue to run the ball and play defense, you need a fullback in today's NFL. Go get me a fullback.
You know what that music means, Brock? Which is better here on the Super Bowl edition of the Brock and Salk podcast? Which is better?
So good to hear this music.
Yeah, it feels right.
Oh. Shakira or J-Lo? Easy answer.
J-Lo! Shakira, Shakira from the block!
No. Shakira's better all around. Not close.
Really?
Shakira. Yeah.
J-Lo's music is a lot better.
Way better.
A lot.
Disagree.
Better.
I don't know more than two songs by Shakira.
Neither do I.
Exactly.
But I don't know more than two songs by J-Lo.
Well.
I know Jenny from the Block and that If You Have My Love song.
My love don't cost.
Oh, I guess I know three. All right. She beats her by one.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Well, we settled it.
Not enough.
Yeah.
Doesn't. What is J-Lo? 50?
Yeah.
50 years
Jenny.
Old.
She's also married to A-Rod. That's got
to
take
married
away points.
Married to A-Rod.
She's with A-Rod.
That's a power married? Couple.
Yeah, they just, they're engaged.
Who knows?
Are they?
Cares? I just looked this up, because I thought they've been together forever. It's been like 3 years.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, for both of them, that's forever. give it credit.
What was the tongue thing that Shakira
I didn't
did?
Get that.
So apparently that's
that.
A Cuban thing. It's like, or right? No, it's a Lebanese thing.
Lebanese.
That's right, because her dad is Lebanese, right. And it was an homage to her dad.
That's cool.
His culture.
All right.
I don't know what it means or why you do it.
I'll buy that.
That's what it is.
So we agree.
Tom Wassel Lebanese?
Yeah, Tom's a bit Lebanese. Yeah,
I've never seen him do that.
Oh, yeah, he does that before every show. You don't see him do that to the microphone?
He walks up to Jake and does that.
All right, I'm ready.
Make sure I ask.
Can we get Tom to do that?
Tom, you can do the Lebanese tongue shake?
Get one of these cameras on Tom.
As an homage to your grandparents.
Did you see what one Twitter after the game? They put the goat, the say what goat,
oh, really?
With his little lip.
They got the goat on there doing that?
Parents of Shakira. Oh, pretty good.
Oh. The one I saw was that it was her trying to do the rest of Informer.
Mm.
All right. Which is better, Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff? Who are you taking moving forward? You get your choice. You want Jimmy G or you want Jared Goff?
I'm going to take Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm surprised with all this hate for Jimmy Garoppolo after that game. Like, okay, he may not have the strongest start, but he had a 90% completion rate in the first half. Threw over 20 passes. Like, you can win with that
guy. Watching him at the end of the game have no clue what to do and how to bring his team back was a little telling. It's the NFL, and a lot of guys, when given the right opportunity, can throw that 80, 90% completion rate when their guys are open. But what do you do at the end of the game when your team needs 4 points? Can you take them down the field? And he did not have that ability
at
all.
Jared Goff doesn't know what to do at the beginning of the game.
That's
like,
also
true. He needs Sean McVay telling him what to do every play.
All that said, I'm with Howdy. I'll take Jimmy G.
Yeah, I think you take Garoppolo as well.
I don't think it's that close. I don't think Goff's that good. I think he's in a very interesting offense.
$30 million guy.
Yeah.
Both of those organizations have committed to those guys for better or worse.
And we're both sitting here going, yeah, I don't really want either.
Jared Goff, number 4 in cap commit, and Garoppolo, number 9.
Number 9.
Oof. Russell, number 1.
All right, which is better, trophy or trophy wife? And I ask this only because that's what Andy Reid said after the game. He was asked about hanging out with the Super Bowl trophy, and he said, I'm going to hang out with my trophy wife. First of all, great line. Second of all, she seems awesome, delightful. Yep. She hung out with him all during her interview. I ended up watching ESPN's coverage afterwards, which was a mixed bag. Boomer was kind of doing his thing. But Andy Reid came over to ESPN's set, and he was hanging out with Boomer, and those two guys seemed like they knew each other very well.
And Steve Young, too, right?
Yeah, Steve Young, that was a nice part of it, and Randy Moss. That was actually kind of an interesting group.
And his wife just came with him and hung out, and they asked her a couple of questions. Like, I thought it was great. Was it something? I don't ever recall seeing anything like that.
No, you had mentioned Ed Orgeron's wife was right by his side in this national title game.
I think I was definitely asleep by then.
Yes, you had mentioned this earlier. All the challenges they've had off the field.
Yeah,
and
he's been with her forever. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, and some of the challenges with their family and their son. I mean, they have just been through a lot more than anything football is ever going to throw your way. And, yeah, you do feel that pretty strong bond between the two. I'd agree. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that was great. Good for him.
Producer's nightmare, though. You're trying to interview the head coach, and right. Now you got a package deal with his wife. You're like,
they made it good, though. And, like, Chris, Boomer kind of put his microphone
Chris
over there.
Chris was like, and his better half, forgive me, excuse me, Mrs. Reed, Andy's here. And then Patrick Mahomes came up. Now he's got three people. Chris Myers was not ready for that. You want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo not being ready at the end of the game? Chris Myers over his head.
Poor guy.
I'm not going to say anything about sideline reporters. All right, that's a hard job.
You're a sideline analyst.
As long as we're doing which is better, let's go Joe's. Joe Buck or Joe Tessitore? It's Joe Buck.
Joe Buck.
I was thinking about it during the games. God. Joe said something during the game that made me think about it and compare the two. And I don't remember the exact quote, but it was at some point he made a very offhanded comment about how it was a pretty good game. And he didn't overdo it. He just was like, yeah, pretty good one going here. And like, he was right. It was a good game. It wasn't an all-time great classic A+, remember it forever Super Bowl. But as it was being played and it was a close game, he made a very subtle comment about, hey, this is a pretty good game. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, yeah, this is a pretty good game. As opposed to when Joe Tessitore is calling one of the worst NFL playoff games I've ever seen that just happened to be close between two awful Houston and Buffalo teams, and he's screaming about how it's an all-time classic in the making, which only served to make me think, no, it isn't.
No, it's really not.
It's really not that.
Unbelievable game. Yeah, Buck, can you believe it?
Lots of credit to Joe Buck. He gets a lot of grief. I think most of it is unnecessary. I think he does a really, really good job and made the Super Bowl feel big. So credit to him.
I would agree. Buck is awesome. Buck's got a baseball background. When you listen to that, you hear a lot of baseball. You hear Jim Nantz, who's got a golf background. You know, those guys spend just as much time or more calling golf and calling baseball than they do calling football. In that bedside manner, I think, is...
But Joe amps it up a little more for football than Jim Nantz does, I think. And I like Nantz, too. I have no...
And Al Michaels
not a shot.
Took the kitchen out of his house. He goes out
best.
To eat every
I mean,
night.
Al Michaels almost in a league of his own in terms of how great he is at doing these things. But I think Buck, he's got a really good mix of energy where he can kind of pull some of the Al Michaels. He's got a little Al Michaels in him mm-hmm. with his ability to be conversational and enjoy the game like that. And he's also got some of that Summerall where he can be understated when the moment calls for it. Yeah. I think Buck's turned himself into one heck of a broadcaster, and he definitely makes the game better. All right, which is better, brisket or tri-tip? Is this what you had for dinner?
Yes.
Did you make both?
No, the brisket was brought. Graham, Dr. Ager brought over the brisket and the pulled pork. And I had my tri-tips marinating for 2 days.
Yeah, I think tri-tip is a lot easier to make. That's been my experience.
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah. Brisket's a whole thing.
Pulled pork's pretty easy to make.
Right.
You just got to have enough time.
Slow cooker.
Briskets.
Right. When done right, not unmatched.
Yeah.
When done wrong.
Macy said it right. Yeah. I said, what did you like the most? And she's like, oh, that bacon stuff. Like, yeah.
Which was that?
The brisket. Because it had a nice little fatty,
good.
It was.
Nice bark on there.
Oh, gosh.
That bark going.
Delicious.
Which is better, caucuses or primaries?
Are you looking to be entertained or are you looking to have an efficient way to elect a president?
What the heck are they doing there?
Whoa.
At recording time, they still have no idea who won the Iowa caucuses. What a ridiculous idea for 2020. I totally understand how this made sense when people had as much time as they did, like in 1840. How in the world could you expect people in our society to do the caucus thing?
My wife,
what a
Caitlin,
ridiculous
thought it was
idea.
Saturday Night Live. Like, this is not true. They are mocking this. Like, where is the joke?
There's
when
truly
the
a coin toss?
Come?
There were some coin tosses. Yes, in
there
some of the precincts.
There was someone going around, everyone, put your hands up, and then they would count. 1, 2, 3. No, I already counted. No, you. I think I counted you. Put your hand down, and then you up. Like, oh my gosh.
It was really bizarre. They should not do these anymore. I mean, I like the idea behind it. I like the idea. Tom Tagney will always talk about this. Like, he likes the idea of going and caucusing with his neighbors and talking about the issues with them and kind of going through it, which in an older time makes a lot of sense. But in 2020, I don't think it does. That was a tough watch last night. All right, which is better, doing sidelines for the XFL or play-by-play for the Rainiers?
Oh, baby.
Well, Clayton did play-by-play for the Rainiers. Clayton did play-by-play for the Rainiers, right?
So you're going to be doing some sidelines. Robertson, he called many games for the Rainiers.
Are you excited?
I am. It's going to be a challenge. I've never done sidelines. I think it's one of those things we can kind of laugh at Chris Myers or different sideline people, and then when you're actually in it,
mostly just laughing at you.
A lot of things flying around. So I'm going to like almost be on the field, basically.
Are you going to wear that puffer coat?
No, it's going to be 75 in Houston.
No, I mean when you're here in Seattle.
Oh, my Fox Sports jacket?
Oh, probably. You have to wear a Fox Sports.
Nice. I would think so.
I'll wear mine.
Yeah, why don't you wear yours? I'll wear mine.
Brock got me a Fox Sports jacket.
Are you going to get us? Can you get us sideline passes so we can come hang out with you in the sideline? Nope. Why?
Because you mock it.
Well, but I think we'd be fun. Don't you think you'd have more fun if the three of us were with you on the sideline?
Sure. My sideline producers?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
I'll be your spotter on the sideline. Do you need a spotter?
Do I have a sideline producer Saturday in Houston?
I don't know. Do you?
Yes,
is that a thing?
One? Yes, it is a thing. I didn't know it was a thing.
Wait, each person has a producer on the broadcast crew?
The sideline folks do. Yes, I did not know that.
Is that like just a personal
more like
assistant?
Facilitate cues from the director?
Or? Yeah, and just kind of help and set up shots and help get players and coaches and all sorts of stuff.
Does Jess have that?
At Wazoo? I don't think so.
She's her own producer.
Yes.
I believe that. Jess can handle all of that. All right. Are we done?
Is we
I guess we just I guess never we ran to the end of the music.
Wow.
I guess
podcast world.
I guess we
world.
Don't have time to talk about Jordan Spieth. That's too bad.
Oh,
I'll just kind of move right past that. Oh, well.
He's going back to Q school after this?
I guess we don't have time.
Q school.
Just out of the top 50
this
year.
Is he playing?
You know, that's really unnecessary.
I'm just asking.
They didn't make the cut.
I hear there's an opening at Sahali as the new No pro
he didn't
there.
A, he didn't have a good couple days.
Good couple years.
Good couple years.
He didn't have a, he's having a, it's having
Jordan
a rough
Spieth
go of it.
Is bad, and you guys are eating it for that.
I How still like you. Jordan Spieth a lot, but I can admit he is atrocious.
He will be back. He will be back. As will we next week. Until then, the hay. See everybody.
Death of the Chopper!